This next session is on taking great ideas to market. And I'm very excited to be a part of this session, especially when I read through all of the CVs and got to know the speakers and realized that this session is all about being a scientist and something else. And these three speakers are all very successful at merging both the science and another world together to become a very successful person in the biotechnology industry. Our first speaker is Dr. Mimi Healy. Dr. Healy graduated from Central Washington with a triple major in biology, microbiology, and psychology, and also managed a minor in chemistry. She then moved to Washington State University, where she studied HPV and proto-oncogenes and earned her master's and PhD degrees in microbiology. Since then, she's held many different positions in the biotechnology industry, but one that's most notable is when she served as president and CEO of Bacterial Barcodes. She led the development of the DiversiLab system, which is a RET-PCR system that's fully automated for bacterial genotyping. While she was there, she managed to develop the company in 18 months to facilitate the sale of the company for a 25x return in just 18 months, which is very impressive. Today, that she now serves in her current position as president of H2F Consulting, which provides biotechnology consulting to small, incubator and small biotech companies. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Healy.
Thank you guys very much for coming to hear me talk today. I hope that you'll find what I have to say interesting or entertaining or some sort. I'm not going to talk much about how I got to where I was. I'm certainly happy to answer that question in the question and answer sessions or anytime afterwards. If you guys want to talk to me, I'm happy to help you out how I got to where I am today. Basically, my bio covers it. After graduating from school, I did not do a postdoc. Actually went straight into industry. I worked for a large biotech company, and basically that was my postdoc. I learned how to do research, product development, commercialization, regulatory, quality systems. And then from there, I went to a medium-sized company and again continued to learn about taking products to market. And then the next company that I went to was one that I actually ran and sold to a large international biotechnology company. So what I'm going to talk about today is how do we take ideas, scientific ideas, or innovative ideas, and how do you get those to the marketplace? Because there's so many ideas today that can be helpful, but unless you get it out into the population or unless we can commercialize that, they don't really do anybody any good. Originally, I was scheduled to talk third, so my slide said covered by previous speakers. They're actually coming after me now. But they'll talk about when you have an idea, what do you need to do? You need to make sure that you have the right to use that idea. And you can get that by patenting that idea or by licensing that idea. And so I'm not going to cover that, nor am I going to cover financing in any great detail. The one thing that I would say about financing is the best type of financing that I've had success with is non-dilutive financing. Usually those are through grants and other ways that you can get that money without actually having to give up some of your company for that money. And then the second thing is collaborative work, where you have a collaborative work with universities or key opinion leaders in the field where they actually help you develop the product, so they actually feel like they own some portion of your product when it goes to market. So that's all I'm gonna leave the rest of the intellectual property and the funding to these guys to cover. So where do new products come from? Obviously, they come out of research. And that research can be educational or research institutions. It can also happen within companies. So today, a lot of the companies actually are outsourcing their research, and the reason why is because it's very expensive to run research labs. A lot of the ideas that they have in those research labs are actually now purchased by acquiring a smaller company or acquiring technology from one of the educational institutions. Oftentimes, these ideas come from actually addressing a market need. So there's a need for this product, and we come up with an idea to fill that need. Oftentimes, it's the redefining a product or redefining the way we do something so that it makes it bigger, better, faster, or more. Usually what we do when we redevelop a product is we make it cheaper and easier to use, and there's less hands-on time, because that's the thing that's really expensive, is the people that actually operate whatever the function of that product is. Sometimes the idea that you come up with actually fixes a problem. Sometimes when you just come across a problem. And sometimes while you're trying to fix a problem, you come up with an answer to something else. And certainly one of the well-known examples of that is from 3M, the Post-it notes, where they were trying to find a glue that stuck really well and it didn't stick. And so we all know today how well Post-it notes goes. And they were actually trying to fix a different problem when they found the answer to that problem. When we do research, this is a portion of the work that we call proof of principle. And so while you're doing your research, this is where we say, this is my idea, and this is how we can apply it. So in a commercial setting, you would be able to use my idea to do X, Y, and Z, which again generally solves a problem, answers a question, makes something more rapid, makes it easier to do, or for something that, you know, an idea that had never been done before, for things like the invention of PCR. So once we have that research established, and again, the intellectual property for that is very important, most of the universities today have technology transfer groups that help you patent these ideas when you come up with them. A lot of times there's universities now that offer classes where it's a scientific legal class where they talk about how to protect the ideas that you come up with. And it's really important that you have the knowledge that this is a really great idea, but I always need to be able to protect the things that I come up with. And one of the things that's also important for that is keeping a good lab notebook, because you can always go back to those lab notebooks, especially if they're signed and dated and countersigned, and say, look, we were the first ones to come up with this idea because here's the information in our lab notebooks. So how do we get the ideas to the market? There's incubator and startup companies. There's angel investors, and this is often referred to as friends and family, entrepreneurs, grant seekers. Oftentimes an idea or intellectual property portfolio, it's just an idea, and it's not actually enough to support an entire company, or it's not enough to support an entire company for an extended period of time. So oftentimes when we set up small startup companies, they need to have advice, a little bit of regulatory advice, a little bit of quality advice, a little bit of development advice, a little bit of marketing advice, but they don't have enough money to hire each one of those people, because eventually they're going to sell off that idea to become a product line for a larger company. So if you have a portfolio of ideas that covers multiple applications and multiple ideas, then to build a company from that to be sustainable is one way to go. But generally what happens is an idea is only ever a product line. And companies and ideas can get bigger, they can get bought, or basically you can go home. So the last option's not as good. So most small biotech companies look for two things. One of those things is an exit to a larger company to sell the product for an acquisition. And the other one is to get enough funding and say, look, our portfolio has some synergistic technology with this other idea. And if we put those two together, then those two ideas or those four ideas will be enough to sustain an actual profitable company for a long period of time. There's a number of centers called POCCs. They're called proof of concept centers. And basically basically what they are is they get funded, a research idea gets funded, and then from that, there's some development work that is done on those products. The Technology Transfer Office also is instrumental in having companies or having entrepreneurs come in and look at the ideas that you guys have as researchers and transfer or license that knowledge out to other companies. So the product development or the commercialization portion is actually my specialty. So I take a research paper that you would do like in graduate school, and I take that idea and I put it into a box and put a little bow on it, okay? And how you do that entails commercial product feasibility and marketplace viability. That means if you have a really great idea, but nobody wants to buy it, it's the same thing in science as it is with any other application. Somebody has to, that has to fill a need or a purpose, and it has to do that by being cheaper, faster, easier to use, less hands-on time. And today, often, it needs to be two or three of those together. Not just solving one of those problems is enough to make somebody change their standard operating procedure or their workflow in their laboratory or wherever they're using this particular invention. Commercial optimization. So when we do the development work, when you have an idea, the farther along that you can get it past the proof of principle, which entails commercialization of that product, application to a field, the more money that you will reap from your investment. Things that are important in product development and commercialization, oftentimes they involve the lab, but they involve repetitive experiments. And those things give you product logistics, shipping and storage. So if you have a product and it solves five different problems that you have, including money, it's faster, it's easier to use, but its shelf life is 2 days, forget about it. You either have to go back to the lab and figure out how to make its shelf life 6 months, a year, 2 years, because once you manufacture that product, you have to store it in the warehouse, and then you have to ship it out to a customer. If it has to be shipped at minus 80, that costs a lot of money in order to ship things on dry ice. And so what you want to do is figure out if you lyophilize that product or if you put it in some other format that it reduces the shipping costs. Because all these things come together and they're part of your cost of goods when you actually sell that product. The manufacturability of the product. If it takes you 100 days to make a single product that you're only going to get 4 cents for, that's not a good investment. That you can actually do some proof of concept as far as the development and the production of this by making several different lots of this yourself in a pilot production where you would follow a specific procedure in order to do the manufacturing. You need to think about whether you want to be an expert at one particular thing or you want to be a generalist, okay, so you have multiple things. So one of the projects that we worked on, we did just the chemistry and just the software. So the big instrument that we used, we used an outside manufacturer to make the big instrument for us, but we own the intellectual property for all the software and all the chemistry that went along with it. So when you sell an instrument one time. So if you make a small profit off selling the instrument one time, that's fine because your customer continues to use reagents and continues to upgrade their software package. So those are things that give you a continuous revenue. So one of the things that you need to think about is, if you're going to make a product, then is that something, what does your business strategy look like in order to sell that product? And if you're going to sell it one time, you better be able to make a big product profit off of selling that product one time. Documentation is really, really important, and that's why I say your lab notebook. I always come back to your lab notebook. It's really important to document how you got to where you were. It's really important to think about experiments and to make sure that you use controls, because the last thing you want to do is have somebody come in to do due diligence on your product and they take it and they try and do it and they say, we can't repeat this. What steps did you take to do this? Where are your controls that you used to do this? Verification and validation are techniques that we use in order to set up a quality system. So there's a lot of regulations, especially if you're in the medical diagnostics, if you're in the veterinary, if you're even in food applications, that you have to follow quality systems. So ISO 9000 quality systems regulations, QSR, is a quality plan for your entire company. And the reason why that there's these quality systems that you have to follow is they make you actually set up your plan before you run your experiments. So now when we talk about development, a lot of that is verifying your idea and validating that you can make it and that you can make it over and over, and it gives you the same answer every time you do that. Again, with the testing, repeatability, reproducibility, sensitivity, specificity, all of those things are important as far as how your product acts and whether that it's something that you can use in your lab. If you have a 5% failure in your lab and it's your idea, that's all you better have, because once you set it out into the commercial marketplace, you're going to add an automatic 5% failure, because customers never follow the directions. Promise, guaranteed, never follow it. So if you have a 10% failure in your lab, you invented it, you're the expert at it, it's not going to be successful outside. You want to have the minimum number of steps to in order to get your product to work. Pipette, 1, 2, 3 steps. If you can reduce that to pipetting 2 steps, that's 2 less errors that your customer can make. So it's really important to make it as easy as you can and to make the minimum amount of mistakes that someone else can make. Product commercialization, again, competitive market analysis. And that means not only the information that you've gathered as far as your product, yes, it can solve a problem, but what else out there in the market can solve the problem? And you also better look at a few research articles, because just because it's not commercially available today doesn't mean that somebody's not going to snap that idea up that somebody's just published in a research article, you know, in the last month of JCM. Technical marketing. If you have a product that's new to the market, the technical marketing aspect of it is really important. So it's not, you know, which colors match each other type of marketing. It's the kind of marketing that says, here's the specificity, the reproducibility, the repeatability, the sensitivity of my product. Here's how it compares to these other products. And that is available on the market today. You can do a turnaround time. You can do a workflow time. You can. Some annoying person didn't turn off their phone over there. The customer experience. If you have collaborators that are helping you do this, one, they probably have a lot of samples that you want to run. If you do a collaboration with them, it's easier to get those samples. And again, they're married to the product. It's a lot easier for you to develop publications and scientific presentations. Everything that someone else presents, as opposed to you, if it's my idea, I want you guys to present it. I don't want to be the one presenting it because it's my product. So if you have other people that are involved that have good reputations, that are key opinion leaders, that are early adopters in the field, those people are good people to work with to develop your research and then to get ready to commercialize your product. We talked a little bit about CGMP is current good manufacturing practices, quality systems, ISO, and risk management and mitigation. So if you have a product that's going to be super risky in the market, then that product, you need to make sure that you have some risk mitigation. So if your product is something, if you test somebody with this product and they're yes or no ultimately means the demise of that person, there's a lot bigger risk than if the product that you use is going to tell you whether they have long or short fingernails, right? It doesn't, it's irrelevant. So the risk mitigation for that is a lot less. So when you take the ideas to market, you can take your scientific ideas to the marketplace. You can be a person who helps other people take their scientific ideas. When I was in graduate school and I ran the same experiment 400 times to finally get it to work, and I thought, wow, this is a really good idea. Now can I get out of the lab because I'm done doing this? I knew a long time ago that I was never going to be the kind of scientist that found a cure for cancer or did anything in the lab other than that I was creative and I was really anal about things. So how do I set up an experiment? What controls do I use? And you can use your creativity to say, I can do these 4 experiments to answer this question. So which one of these experiments can I do the fastest, the easiest, and the cheapest? Because at the end of the day, you always have to conserve your money, whether you're conserving your grant money or whether you're conserving the money that you get from the venture capitalists. And so it's important for you to be able to think outside the box. how can I set up a system that's easier for me to use that'll still validate the product that I'm trying to make? What other ways can I do to bring this in? You can be part of a technology transfer group at the university if you want to work with people in the research institution, understand the science, and be able to work with big companies and try and find the synergies between the research. For a big company and do business development, which means that it's your job to work for a big company, and then you go out and you go to the technology transfer offices and look for technologies. You go out and look at the startup companies and say, I found this great startup company with this great idea. If we marry this into our microbiology program or into our cancer program, I think it'll add depth to our program, and that would be good for us. You can do it yourself by creating your own startups, being an entrepreneur. You can do it by doing some consulting or be a liaison to help people bring their ideas to the market. This picture up here isn't actually a picture of my my consulting website. This is a picture of my Dog Biscuit website. And the reason why I put this up here is because I'd never set up a website on my own. I'd done one for the company, but my website person did it for the company. And so when you go to do a new adventure and you're like, I'm not exactly sure how to do this, do it on something that you can make a mistake on, right? So nobody's going to care if my dogs were facing the wrong way in my Nag & Gooch website. Now I've learned how to set up an LLC because I did this for the company. I've learned how to use the website, and I've been able to put this up, and I've been able to ask people what they think of the website, how to use that in order to use this as a tool to set up a company of my own. So one of the things that I would encourage you to do is look at how you want to live your lifestyle and find a job that does that. If you like to travel, make sure that you have a job where you can actually do that traveling. If you like to work in the lab, make sure that your job entails at least some portion of your time in that lab. So I think a lot of times people think, well, I like science, but you have to think about what type of lifestyle you want to live, and there's a lot of different jobs that you can do in order for you to achieve that. And people, when you're a little kid, your parents would tell you things, and you'd be like, yeah, whatever, what do you know, right? Your parents got smarter as you got older. Well, now that you're all grown-ups, there are people out there that have done what you want to do. Ask them questions. I'm sure Ed and Adam are willing to talk to you guys for as long as you want and give you the experience that we had, so you don't have to, don't reinvent the wheel. Don't make the same mistakes we did. Talk to people. People are willing to share their experiences with you and help you to get to the next level. Thanks for your attention.